When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following podcast is for parents, maybe not for kids. Hello and welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, June 17th, the Knuckle Sandwich Edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm a writer at Slate and the author of the book How to Be a Family. And I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 16, and Harper, who's 13. We live in Arlington, Virginia.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 8, and we live in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 littles, Henry, who's 9, Oliver, who's 7, and Teddy, who's 4, and we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
On today's show, we are talking about a mother-in-law who just loves to threaten her young grandchildren with a knuckle sandwich. What should our letter writer do? She is not in love with this behavior. Then we have a very special visitor. It's Jamila's mom. We finally get to ask Jamila's mom all the questions we've ever had about how the hell Jamila turned out the way that she turned out. We're very excited. On Slate Plus today, we're talking about Selena, the I Escaped books, and what happens when your traumatic history becomes just the next thing your kid is super interested in. But as always, we're going to kick it off with some triumphs and some fails. Jamila, what do you got?
So Naima made a good girlfriend in this brief time that she had at school this year, in-person school. There were 4 kids in the class, and they fell into 2 kind of bestie groups or whatever. And so she and this little girl made playdate plans for like the last Friday of the school year, which was Friday that just passed. And I was like, cool. Her mom was like, cool. And then at the last minute, her mom wasn't able to do it. And so then we rescheduled for Sunday. And then on Sunday, we had a whole plan. My mother's in town. We were going to go to a little festival, the 3 of us, that my mom wanted to go to and do a little shopping for her. And then I'd drop her off and then we would go on this play date. And Naima would feel better because she'd been so devastated and so upset that, oh, on Friday night, I had to like kind of take her out, do what she wants to do. It was like, hey, let's hang out, whatever you want to do. I know you're disappointed about this. I'll make it up to you as best I can. We had a nice time. So on Sunday, we're getting dressed to go. And the little girl's mom says, hey, I'm so sorry. I got an opportunity to cover a shift at work and I can't pass it up right now. We're not going to be able to make it. So it's this completely fair reason, you know, and like completely understandable to adults, but to a child, it's like, what? You're just taking this thing away from me. So Naima's immediately like, we're just never going to happen. It's just not happening. And the girls had like just signed off of playing Roblox, like, see you in 2 hours. And so like, she texts her like, it's not happening. So no, see you in 2 hours. And, you know, and I'm like, Naima, you and I will go and we'll have a nice day. And whenever they are available next week, I will drop anything. I will make it happen, right? Like whenever they're available, we will go on this play date. And she's like, no, I'm just, you know, I'm just, today is just done. It's just done. And I'm not going to smile. There's nothing you can do to make me smile. I will never smile again. So like, this is the energy with which she left the house. My mother decided to not go with us, probably because, you know, Naima had declared that she was never going to smile again. So this wasn't really looking like the best time at the festival. But my triumph is that somehow I managed to pull her out of that funk with a combination of some good fun tunes in the car and a little cotton candy and a little bit more overindulgence in sugar. And we had a really, really happy day and she smiled. And when we were coming home, she said, I know I said I wasn't going to smile today, but I really had a good day with you. And we have these necklaces that she just gave, like my mom bought for her. Took her to buy and so she and I could have them at Claire's. It says mother and daughter. It's like a half heart. I have to like remember to take this off. That's so I'm going to the club tonight. But like her thing now is that we like hold them up to each other. And so like we were coming in and she told me that I made her smile. Like she held up the necklace to me. And like when I was putting her to bed and I thought she was asleep, she just holds up her necklace like, mm-mm. So this, what was going to be the worst day ends up being one of the best days we've had together in a really long time.
That's really sweet.
Are you just like exploding with all the cool mom joy too?
Yes, I felt like such a cool mom. I was like, I took you out to something that I actually enjoy doing too. And like, it was not miserable. We didn't have to like, I don't know, go to Chuck E. Cheese or something. Like, we just had a really nice time in each other's company.
Doing something normal. I love that. Way to recover the day.
Way to recover. Shout out to Sugar.
Yeah, sometimes when a kid is really determined to make a full day a disaster, it can feel like there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. That you too are sentenced to that. So the act of pulling them out of that without being overt about it, without being like, okay, now smile. Now right. Smile. Smile now. Like, that's really good.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, what about you? Triumph or fail?
Fail for me. So we had a big weekend of just like moving errands. Like, there's all kinds of things that the movers either like lost or damaged beyond repair that need replaced. And we usually try to like just do one adult and one kid running errands. But it was like some of the things we need are like some furniture. And so we decided we'd take the whole family out so that we could like all sit around the hopefully new dining room table and like kind of make sure that everybody liked it in hopes, you know, that it doesn't get broken again. It's nice. So we got everyone into the car, but my car, after coming back from the road trip, needed to go into the shop. And when Jeff took it, he was like, oh, I'm going to sit with it. So I emptied nothing except for Teddy's car seat. Like, the other two kids have travel car seats. Okay, well, fast forward 2 weeks, that car is still in the shop. So I'm in like a temporary vehicle. So I have none of the things that I usually have. So I rush the kids out of the house. It's like always kind of a mess to get everybody in the car, especially because we don't have our, you know, not everyone's in their normal car seats. They don't have their normal stuff in the car. I get everybody in the car. We drive like 25 minutes to the first store. We open the doors and we're getting everybody out. And Henry's like, oh, we're going to the store. I don't have shoes on. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have shoes on? Like, who gets in the car without shoes on? So I'm like, okay, there's a Marshalls here. So I take Teddy and I go to the Marshalls, and Jeff puts socks on Henry and like puts him into the cart, like in the of the cart of the Bed Bath and Beyond, and they go to get a trash can with Oliver. So like my, you know, 70-pound 9-year-old is like in the cart, like pushing him around shopping for trash cans. I go to the Marshalls. There is like nothing in his size, but I find a pair of those like sport slides, a size and a half too big. And I think like, okay,
like,
well,
the Mark Zuckerberg Adidas.
Yes, exactly. Those exact shower, things. But, yeah, you know, some like one pair of some kind of off brand at Marshall. So I purchase these for $16. I'm like, whew, like disaster averted, because we have so many shops to go to. I like give them to him. He looks crazy because they're way too big, but at least they're shoes. We like continue on our day, run our errands. Okay. We go out on Sunday and we are headed to the library to like go get some books. And I pull up and we're getting out of the car. It's just me. And Teddy's like, I don't have shoes. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have shoes? So
what about your new slides?
He's like, can't you just go to the store and buy me shoes? I'm like, no. So we like, I make it work. I run and return the books. We don't get new books. It's totally fine. This morning, you guys, we go to swim team to pick up the children. The two bigs are in swim team. And I open the door to the car, and Teddy's like, you're going to have to carry me. I don't have shoes. There's no excuse. There's no excuse. I just had one kid with me this last time.
Sounds to me like your kid has discovered a fun new game.
I think he has discovered a fun new game. But wait, you picked him up from swim and he was shoeless?
So Teddy was with me and we had to go to like get the kids.
Oh,
from
I'm sorry. Team. Okay. Yeah. He's already in the car. Sorry. I thought you meant on the way.
He's
to
already in the car. Okay. Yeah. I just had one kid with me all morning, and somehow we had shoes when we dropped them off. We did not have shoes when we picked them up.
You were getting played.
Do you get it? Yeah. I'm like,
loves getting carried and buying new shoes.
Are you going to find these shoes in a seat back pocket when you return the rental?
The shoes are like exactly where they're supposed to be here at the house, in the cubby by the door. No, I mean, if this were my car, I would throw the shoes in there and the shoes would never leave there. Like, I would take them off of his feet and I would just stick them back in the car so that there was always a pair. But it's not my car. And so
you should put the slides in there.
Yeah.
Everyone can just wear the size 8 slides.
Yeah.
These are the forgotten.
They're the emergency shoes.
Shoes.
Like, you have an emergency first aid kit.
Okay, like, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah.
The shoes of shame.
And then whoever rents the car next will have a nice treat waiting for them. Exactly. Size 8 athletic shower slides. All right. I have a It's somewhere between, it's a little bit of triumph, a little bit of fail, all baked in a casserole. I'll let you guys judge where it falls on the spectrum in the end. So Harper is graduating from eighth grade, from middle school this week. And, you know, it's been a very strange school year. And so I think Harper is not maybe quite as jazzed about the whole graduation experience as she might have been in a normal school year. Or maybe she's just at the age where, like, you just don't get jazzed about that stuff, where it just all seems sort of vaguely embarrassing that people are making a big deal out of anything. So they've had a bunch of, you know, sort of modest activities, including the ones that I discovered after I called the school so angrily to complain about how it was going to be a Zoom graduation in my previous fail. But then, you know, eventually they announced they're going to have, like, you know, yard signs for everyone, which we haven't picked up yet, and a greeting from the principal. And the big thing was this drive-through parade that they announced, which seemed very fun. The idea was, for like a 2-hour window earlier this week, you could drive through the front driveway of school and everyone from school would be there cheering all the graduates on, all the teachers and staff and a bunch of parents and everyone. And they promised there would be decorations and noises and fun and the kids would really enjoy it. Harper was mildly interested in this and willing to do it, but definitely was not evincing a lot of enthusiasm about it. But I was feeling sort of bad that an occasion that in previous years probably would have meant a lot more pomp and circumstance in general from us and from the school and from the world, it just felt like it was a little bit flat for her. So I was like, all right, well, one thing I know we can do is for this drive-through parade, we can decorate the car. That's the thing that everyone loves to do around Arlington. It's a real suburban joy activity for any big event in a kid's life. They're on a sports team that made it to state, or it's prom, mm-hmm. or you just turned 12 or whatever. Everyone decorates their cars with like special car paint and streamers and balloons and shit. And then for like a week afterwards, you see the car driving around with like the ghosts of all this writing on the windows. It's like, it seems like it's sometimes it seems like 70% of the cars in Arlington are in some stage of
celebration,
decoration, decomposition. So I was like, well, I'm gonna decorate the car for Harper while for her parade. She's gonna love it. So the parade was Monday. Harper has gotten herself a little part-time job babysitting for the third grader of a friend of ours for a couple of hours on Mondays when she has her asynchronous learning day. So she doesn't have any actual classes. So she has time to go take care of a kid so the kid's parents can get anything done that day. So she loves it. So she was there babysitting for Sebastian. I was going to pick her up at 2:30. And at like 2:27, I was like, all right, how do I decorate this car?
Oh, no.
Needless to say, I had forgotten to buy any paint or anything like that. But I did have soap. I had a bar of Irish Spring soap. So I took that out to the car and I used it to draw on the back windshield. Happy graduation, Harper, Williamsburg, class of 2020, blah, blah. I wrote all this stuff on there. And I thought, honestly, it looked okay. We had a big party streamer and Ollie and I wrapped it around the back windshield wiper. So it trailed behind the car. So I wouldn't say it looked professionally done, but it looked like it looked different than the car usually looked. So I went to pick up Harper at Sebastian's house for the parade. Sebastian was coming along because she was still officially babysitting for him. And they both walked out of the house and looked at the car and Harper went, oh no, Dad, did you do that? And I said, yeah. And Sebastian said, you did that? And I said, yeah. And Harper just literally did like a face palm. And then she shook her head and then she got in the car. We drove toward the drive-through parade. And as we were approaching, I noticed, you know, there are other cars on the road with, let's say, fancier decorations, you know, big balloons they put on the windshield that said class of 2021 or whatever. They decorated their cars.
They did not use soap. Fashion.
And each time one would pass, I was thinking, class of 2021, why do they all put these years from the future on their
car? Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, it is 2021 now, but I wrote 2020 all over our car in Irish Spring soap. And I made this observation to Harper and she went, oh my God, Dad. And then we drove through the parade and I high-fived the Williamsburg Wolf mascot. And they had dozens of people cheering and Harper honestly seemed to like the parade quite a bit. And then we drove home and before I could do anything else, Harper and I wiped off the last zero in 2020 and I brought the soap back out and we replaced it with a one. And then I brought her back to her babysitting gig. So that was her big graduation surprise for me. So what do you think? Fail 'em?
Yes, it's a fail. This is not redeemed.
Where's the
straight
triumph?
Fail. All right, great.
Where's the
which
triumph?
Part was the triumph?
I did anything.
In some cases, doing nothing is better. In
some cases, doing nothing. When we got, I feel like this was already a doing nothing might have been better moment when Harper and Sebastian saw it, but it was the 2020 that took it just perfect. Perfect fail.
This is the real issue is that it turns out I've now been working in magazines long enough that I just need copy editors for everything. I can't go uncopy edited. It's just a disaster waiting to happen. Anyways, happy graduation, Harper.
Happy graduation.
I'm sorry your dad is a fuck up, but better luck in 2025 or whatever year it is you graduate from high school. Who can say? All right. Before we move on to our segments today, we've got a listener update. We love these and we're really grateful for this listener for writing in. So a few weeks back, you might remember that former Mom and Dad Are Fighting co-host Allison Benedict, rest in peace, our bickering correspondent, joined us to tackle a question about grandparents arguing with each other to the point where their grandson was just saying he didn't even want to see them anymore. He couldn't take it anymore. And this listener wrote in after hearing our advice on the show. Jamila, take it away.
Hello again. I just wanted to thank you for your advice and give an update on my situation. Believe it or not, I never thought of talking to my parents separately, and your advice made me realize that I was causing them to be defensive when I brought it up with them both in the room. So I took my mom to the nail salon a week ago, and I told her that the bickering was starting to affect my kids and that G was starting to complain about their arguing. I told her that I don't want to make them see the kids separately, but it would be necessary to separate them if the arguing didn't stop. She was a little defensive at first, but when I brought up how my son complains about visiting them, she softened and said, really? I didn't know it upsets him that much. She told me she would try, but she also said, well, remember, it's not my fault if your dad starts arguing, to which I replied that she can ignore him and walk away. I haven't spoken to my dad yet because he's a lot more defensive and not keen on talking about emotions. However, we just saw them today for the first time since I took my mom to the salon and things have dramatically improved. They hardly argued at all. And when my dad brought up an old argument, my mom just rolled her eyes, shrugged her shoulders and walked out of the room. I was astonished. And the best part of it was that my kids seemed so much more at ease and comfortable. I really noticed a difference in my son's demeanor and reaction to my parents. He happily spent hours talking and reading books with them and he didn't leave the room to play on his own like he usually does. If they do start arguing again, I plan to remind my mom how much happier my son is if he doesn't need to referee or hide from them. Thank you so much for your sage advice and your ability to point me in the right direction to get me on the right track.
That's so great. I love that we were helpful to this woman. I hope at some point she is able to talk to her dad as well or that someone talks to her dad. But this seems like a great start to making this situation better. So I'm going to pass this on to Allison, rest in peace, and let her know that her advice was really good. And thank you so much, listener, for checking back in. And anyone, if we ever answer your question on the show, we love it when we hear back from you. So drop us a line at momanddad@slate.com. All right, let's talk business. First, please subscribe to Mom and Dad Are Fighting. It really helps us out. Plus, it really helps you out because in the daily craziness of the working week, all of a sudden a magical gift will show up in your podcast feed, a new episode. It's a win-win. And if you want even more of our show, you should become a Slate Plus member. You'll get a whole bonus segment every single week. Here's a sneak peek of what you could hear today.
There's also like September 11th, like Pearl Harbor, like these.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Yes. I Survived 9/11.
There's
book
I Survived 9/11. That is really the one that initially set me off.
Not only will you get fun extra segments like that, you'll also get the rest of the podcast with no ads. You'll get bonus episodes for shows like Slow Burn and Big Mood, Little Mood. You'll get to listen to the whole new season of Decoder Ring now instead of waiting for my episode, which otherwise you'll have to wait until July for. And you'll get unlimited reading on the Slate site. So support Mom and Dad Are Fighting. Support Slate. Sign up for Slate Plus. It's only $1 for the first month. Just go to slate.com/momanddadplus. And if you want even more of us, sign up for Slate's parenting newsletter. It's the best place to be notified about all our parenting stuff, including Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Care and Feeding, and much, much more. Also, it's just, you know, a personal email from me every week. Sign up at slate.com/parenting email. All right, let's take a quick break.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. All right, on to our first listener question. Let's hear it, Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, I have an 18-month-old daughter, and my husband and I live in the same city as his parents. They've been great, and I can count on them if we ever need them. I've always had some concerns, though, because they aren't always into new ideas, especially when it comes to parenting. My mother-in-law had 3 boys by the time she was 25, so it's been a while since she's had to parent. For example, they both were a little grossed out that I breastfed my daughter until 9 months, and were elated when we switched to formula. Last summer, during quarantine, Grandma watched our then 6-month-old over the summer. And when my daughter did anything quote-unquote bad, she would say to my daughter, "Do you want a knuckle sandwich?" while shaking a balled-up fist at her. I was horrified at first. My mother-in-law doesn't take criticism well at all and gets defensive. So I talked to my husband about it because he's always been willing to handle those situations. He thought it was harmless and just a funny thing. I mentioned it to my therapist, who also said that while not ideal, it would not affect how we're raising our daughter. I did my best not to let it bother me. Fast forward to now. My daughter will ball up her fists when they say it, and it's all cute and funny to them. Until last weekend, when my father-in-law did the whole routine, but proceeded to fake punch my daughter in the eye. I was shocked. I know they would never hit her or anyone, but why? That's not cute or funny. My husband didn't see it, but he said he would handle things with his dad. Do I trust that it will stop? How do I start speaking up for my parenting with my in-laws? Do I chalk it up to the old-style parenting of boys? I don't feel like it's my place to talk to them, but sometimes I feel my husband lets too much time pass before bringing things up. Thanks. Intimidated and shy mom.
Okay, I think this is like all about the intonation and like the scenario in which this is done. So my in-laws do something like this. It has to do more with like, eat this food or, you know, would you prefer a knuckle sandwich? And my kids think it's hysterical. I mean, they just laugh. It's like very loony, toony, you know, like violent, funny. I don't find it funny. They find it funny. I think, though, that the joke for the kids is because they know their grandparents would not punch them, right? Like, they know that the punch or the knuckle sandwich is like a fake threat. So that is funny to them. That being said, it's clearly a big deal to her, to the letter writer. But if you have outsourced this to your husband, like you have said, this is your family, you need to deal with this, this is why it bothers me, I think you have to believe that he is going to talk to them about it and do something about it. I'm not sure that it's necessarily like smart to then get involved in something in which you have expressed to him that you don't like with his family. He has said he's going to address it until there is some demonstration that like there is some sort of harm or it's causing some kind of problem. You know, if your child starts punching people, this is a whole different conversation. I just really feel like she has to trust that he's going to do something about it instead of like trying to go around it and now talk to the parents about this when he hasn't gotten a chance. So, I mean, I think expressing her displeasure to her husband about this behavior is fine and discussing that because maybe, you know, without seeing it, it's hard to know, like, does it really feel harmless and funny? And then just something like we don't do at home. And in fact, when my kids have made the knuckle sandwich joke at home, I've just said like, I don't really find it that funny. And then that has kind of killed it, right? Because the whole point of it is that it's like everybody thinks it's funny and everybody's laughing. And when that ceases to happen, then the joke is no longer funny. So at our house, that doesn't necessarily happen. You know, it happens at the in-laws' house. So I don't know. I think you just let it lie. But what do you guys think?
To your last point, I think you can even articulate that something is maybe a grandma and grandpa's house joke versus an our house joke, right? That's something that I've had to do with Naima. Bathroom humor is not something that I'm willing to entertain in this house, right? And so I'm like, if that's okay at dad's house, that's totally fine. It's fine in a lot of people's houses. It is not something that I want for this house. And I think to that point, you should be clear that your husband is clear on what your opposition to this behavior is and that he has the language to articulate it to his parents. Because if it's just like, well, I don't like it. It's come on. Look at that. Why would you let them do that? Right. Like if he's operating from that place, it may be kind of difficult for him to explain to these old school people why this is so bothersome to you. It may just become, well, you know, she doesn't like it because you're just not, which is not really an ideal way to have that conversation. Right. Like, and so what is it to you, letter writer? Because you didn't really articulate it to us. Is it that you don't want to normalize violence? Is it that you don't think any sort of violent play is okay for children? Do you think it's because she's a girl? Like, what is your opposition to it? I think you should make that clear to your husband and also set a time with him for him to have this conversation instead of saying, I hope that he'll get to it, right? Just say like, okay, we're going to be visiting your parents on Sunday. Do you think that maybe you could have a chat with them while we're there? You know, or if we're going to be taking this trip together in 2 weeks, when do you think you'll get a moment with your parents just so we can make sure we're on the same page? What do you think, Dan?
I really feel for this husband in this situation, who I think is probably not saying anything to his parents because he believes, correctly in my opinion, that his parents will be like, but that's not objectionable or bad at all. And it's a cute thing that we share with our grandkids that we like, that with our grandkid that we like and that makes her laugh. And you don't have any good reason for not wanting us to do it. And it doesn't make any sense. And he is worried that it is going to make her look neurotic and weird to his parents to bring this up to them. And I think he's right to worry about that because I think it will make her look neurotic and weird because I really think that this is like a gigantic nothing burger of a behavior situation that if you can find any possible way to do it, you should just continue to let go and not think about it ever again. Like, this is a funny thing that your in-laws do. It's not your style. It harms no one, will never harm anyone, and brings your daughter joy. And continuing to like make an issue about it and to include your husband in making an issue about it is just a recipe for your in-laws being annoyed by you, your husband being annoyed by your in-laws and by you, and you continuing to be annoyed when it's just replaced by some other behavior that you also don't like. So the ideal scenario here, I think, would be for you to continue listening to the advice that your therapist gave you, which is that it's not going to affect how you're raising your daughter. It has no effect whatsoever. And that it really would be best for you to let it not bother you, that a playful, goofy pretend punch in the eye from a person you love that is offered totally in the spirit of funny silliness is not the same, I don't think, and I think certainly your in-laws agree, is not the same as like advocating violence or being permissive about violence. The thing that makes me feel bad about giving this advice is that sign off that she gave in this letter, that she feels intimidated and shy in this situation. And that, I think, seems like a real problem, certainly much realer to me than this imaginary problem of this behavior of the grandparents. And if you're truly feeling, letter writers, so intimidated and shy about this situation that you simply like can't imagine bringing up something that clearly is this is really important to you to these people, you know, that seems worth digging into and exploring, perhaps with that therapist, perhaps with your husband. But I'm curious what you guys think about that sign off, which to me seemed notable in light of the sort of the tone of the rest of the letter.
And you're speaking to kind of like how she says, how do I start speaking up for my parenting with my in-laws? Like, I'm giving you this one example.
Right. And the example she gave earlier in the letter about her parents being like pains in the ass about her breastfeeding, like that's a real thing.
Right.
That's a real thing that I'm sure she wanted to speak up about, but couldn't find it within her ability to do so.
I mean, I think so much of that is about building up that relationship with your spouse too, and having his support in those moments, right? So that, because especially because it's his parents, like being able to have an open dialogue, like I don't see anything wrong with her telling her spouse and having conversations, you know, with her partner about what she doesn't like about the parenting that happens when they're there. But I agree with you, Dan, that some of that then has to be like, if he says, I really don't see, you know, a big deal about this, and if I tell them, this might be the eventual consequence. Like, you have to accept that some things, we say this all the time, some things that your parents do or your grandparents do with your kids, they are not going to be the way you do them. And you just sort of say, this is okay, because you want to have that relationship with them. In the same way that you don't want to be told, you know, how your parenting is wrong, right? They don't want to be told how their parenting is wrong. But I agree with you that I think the issue is that she needs to be able to tell her spouse these things, and then he needs to be there for her in those moments, so that when the breastfeeding is an issue or when something like that comes up, whatever the next thing, you know, how you're potty training, how you're doing this, that it is the person telling their parents kind of, this is how we've decided to do it, right? Standing up for the way you as a family have decided to do something. Is very different, though, than saying, like, we don't do X when X is harmless. And so the two are very different. But I think it all comes from this relationship of trusting the other person. And I think that's the, like, when she says, like, how do I trust him that he's going to do this? I feel like in a partnership, you just have to trust that the other person is going to put your best interest, even if that's not talking to their parents, right? Even if it's to say, I'm going to handle it. If the handling it is just, I'm just for this moment going to make it go away and in our house not laugh about it, right? You have to trust that this person is doing the right thing, even if it's not the way you necessarily wanted them to handle it.
You know what, though? I agree with that. And I do think that, like, an underlying issue may be that this isn't you all's parenting style. This is your feeling that you all have not like talked about effectively so that he's on board, that you all have come to an agreement about like what is acceptable play violence and what isn't, right? Like that it just kind of sounds like you've had this reaction to something and you've made a decision about how you would like for that to be, how that sort of thing would factor in your household, right? Like that perhaps it's no play. And again, I don't know what that thing is, but I'm assuming that it's violence is, you know, to be avoided. But like, if this is not a discussion that you all have had beyond just what it means to have them playing the knuckle sandwich game with the baby, then he certainly is not prepared to communicate this on your behalf. And no, you can't trust him to do it because you all haven't had that conversation. But I will disagree with you all a little bit in that I don't think this is a nothing burger because she's so bothered by it, and that she, it's that reference to defending her style of parenting. Mm. This itself may be a nothing issue, right? Because we don't know how old these grandparents are. When your child is old enough where something like this could be more impactful, I don't know if they would still be playing those games with them, right? But in this moment, it sounds like you feel unheard. And I don't know if you deal with anxiety, but like for a lot of people, feeling unheard or feeling like I want to articulate myself and I can't can be incredibly stressful. And it can make something that is kind of small, like, you know, playing a punching game with the baby, feel like it's this bigger thing because now it's become reflective of the fact that I'm always unheard. And so just really quickly, I want to defend your right to, if this is for you something very serious, and it could be, you know, perhaps the letter writer has some childhood experience with being played with in a rough manner that was bothersome to them. And maybe it wasn't necessarily that an adult was doing it. Maybe it was an adult relative, right? Maybe there was an uncle or a grandparent that was just too rough and tumble, that stood out in contrast with the way that she felt people typically should engage her. It also could be that maybe there were some kids at school that were rough, and the idea of playing rough with her child then begs the idea, will she become that child to someone else, or will she think that roughhousing is normal, and what might that lead to? So I think there could be something a little bit more intense behind this than what the letter has revealed. But either way, I think we're all on the same page about you perhaps speaking to your therapist about how to best address this, as well as talking to your husband at great length.
It does also seem like, because the daughter, I mean, I know the daughter is little, but she does seem to enjoy this. And I do think there's like an aspect of parenting in which sometimes your kids enjoy things that you don't find humorous or that you don't enjoy. And if in fact they are harmless, you do kind of have to, you know, say, okay, well, this is, you know, assessing that it's harmless. And I mean, Jamila, I think it's a really good point that you made, that it's possible there's like so much more behind that, in which case then there may be a really good reason to end this type of play, right? Like if it is causing you some kind of trauma because it's reminding you of something, investigating that with the therapist, and then possibly even, you know, having your husband or you speaking to your in-laws about that for sure. But I think sometimes as parents, we just have to accept these things that are kids find funny and do, and set some rules about where those are. I mean, I think the bathroom humor is a great example. I also just have zero tolerance for that. My husband grew up in a house in which that is like still enjoyed by the entire family and to, you know, lots of laughter. And I would never want to put the damper on that in their home, but it is not something that I want happening in my home. And I think it's okay to have that, to be like, this is a place in which that is enjoyed and it's funny. And this is a place in which like mom doesn't really find it that funny. And so we just, you know, it's better to just not do it here. I don't know.
The thing that I keep coming back to is the wise notion that both of you pointed out of coming to an agreed set of shared parenting ideals with your partner. Like that's the point and the benefit of partnered parenting, is that you have, the two of you have worked out and discussed, and sometimes are figuring out on the fly, but always with as much honesty as you can muster, figuring out what it is you want your house to be like. And in situations like this, in which there's an outside force that is doing something, you know, with your child, that you have to figure out how you feel about it. Part of that honesty is you feeling empowered enough to talk to your partner about how you feel about it. But part of that honesty is also both of you working together to figure out, when is it your parents are being dicks about me breastfeeding? And when is it a thing that the grandparents and our granddaughter really love that my therapist has said will do no harm to anyone? And short of, as Jamila points out, some real past trauma that is making this, you know, outstandingly difficult for you to endure, I think that being able together to work out which side of the line certain behaviors fall on is the goal you should be trying to reach. Not just trying to get your husband to tell your parents, well, don't do this thing because you know her, she hates that stuff, which is what this will inevitably turn into if you treat it in this way. All right. Intimidated and shy mom, I'm sorry if I made you feel more intimidated and shy. We really are rooting for you and rooting for you and your husband to do even more to work out what kinds of parents you're going to be, which has been a hard thing to figure out in these crazy times. And it's something that all of us are still figuring out even now, but we believe that you'll get there. Drop us a line and let us know how it's going. Mom and Dad at Slate.com. All right, let's take a quick break.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
All right, back to the show. All right, listeners, for our next segment, you are in for a treat. Many, many years ago on Mother's Day, Allison and I brought in our mothers to the show, and it was a catastrophic success that I hope never to replicate. But now I've got bigger and better news. The source of Jamila Lemieux, the person who raised her, the source probably, I have to say, of all her wise parenting advice and knowledge and know-how. Joining us today is Jamila's mom. Please welcome Isoki. Hi, Isoki.
Hello.
Hey, welcome. We're so glad to have you here. Jamila, tell us, why is Isoki in your closet right now with you? And why did you want to bring her on the show?
Well, my daughter has provided so much rich content for me over the years. I figured it was time for my mom to do her share. She's largely been protected from all of this stuff. But since she was here, I thought it would be fun to let her join the show.
And Isoki, you've been in LA for a little while, visiting, helping out. How's it been?
It's been so nice to be with my family, to be with my daughter and my granddaughter for the first time in about 13 to 14 months. So I'm very pleased to be here. LA for me is Chicago, and it will take a bit of getting used to, but it's been a pleasant visit so far.
So we like to start off the show with a triumph or fail. So I'm curious if you have a triumph or fail to share with us, either from your time in LA now, or maybe from the distant past of raising our beloved Jamila.
Well, I have a tried and fail with Naima. The last time we were together, I made this meatloaf that she really, really liked. She was just overwhelmed. And this time I made the meatloaf, and not only was she not overwhelmed, didn't really eat it. So that's my fail. On the other side of the coin, the last time we were together, whenever I came close to Naima with a comb or a brush to comb her hair, it was like traumatic. She would scream words like, "You're killing me," and "Please stop it." Now, now she comes to me.
Why are you doing this to me?
No, no,
that's
no.
My favorite.
Why are you doing this to me? Yeah. But she comes to me now and asks me to perform the task. She asked me to do her hair more than once.
Oh, well, that's beautiful. That's a much greater triumph than your fail.
That's
was
a triumph.
Fail. Oh, yeah. Meatloaf is temporary, but that connection is forever.
Yeah.
I think it's also a reflection of how much I failed to make Naima feel comfortable while I do her hair, that she's so excited that someone else's hands will be grooming her while she's here. So it's my fail is your triumph.
So now that you've gotten to spend some really good quality time with Naima, how do you think things are different now for a kid growing up than it was when Jamila was her age? And what similarities do you see between them?
Oh, it's totally different. The main aspects, electronics. Jamila was a tremendous reader. We read books, 10, 15 books a week. Naima goes through 10 or 15 different apps a day. it's the pace is swifter. The learning process is more intense. The kids are absorbing more and more information, but differently. Jamila was introverted. Naima's a tad more outgoing. Mm-hmm. A little, just a little.
So we have heard a lot how much Naima loves your house and particularly your couch. But we want to know what you think about Jamila's house.
Oh, I love it. I could live here. I could do this alone. Naima likes my house, I think, because I have some unique things. and
like African artwork and stuff.
Yeah, I have a lot of that.
The other big thing we've heard about since moving to LA is Jamila's car. Have you had a chance to ride with her?
I have.
How'd it go?
Jamila's car is unique. And therefore, it gets a lot of attention. And she drives like her dad. Can I say how?
Really sure. Good?
Like a bat out of hell.
I did not.
Yeah. You have your.
Mind. I'm sure he would say. But that I love just
the car. The car is really cool.
It is really cool.
Yeah.
I think I'm such a safe, responsible, like slow driver.
Okay.
You're mentioning the attention that the car gets, brings me to another thing that I'm curious about. You know, Jamila's life is really lived in public. She writes and newsletters and talks on this podcast about her life, about her family, about you sometimes, for a living. And I'm curious how you feel about having a daughter who is really putting herself out there in that way. And does it ever make you nervous to have what you might sort of feel like is your business out in the world?
But of course, you think about what could happen in the future as a result of putting everything on the line. And the fact that I'm not that type of a person. I'd like to function in the background, make things happen, be the mover and shaker, but I don't have to. I want to be up front. But she's been this way for quite a while now. So I've become accustomed. We started writing and publishing at 14. Mm-hmm.
Not consistently. But
the beginning. That was the beginning. And I had to assume that that was the direction she was going into. And I had to adjust. And when she started working for a major magazine, I knew I had to adjust because that was who she was. We have been in different cities and walked down the street and she's been recognized. Initially, that was kind of, wow, you know. Oh.
Yeah.
But it took a bit of getting used to.
Do you call her up and share your opinion on the things she writes? Or do you?
Of course. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think my mom has a strict only positive feedback policy with me still, even though I'm 46 and could probably take it. Do you have that policy with Jamila, or will you disagree with her on stuff?
Well, we discuss things. And being from different generations, of course, we have different opinions and different backgrounds. But more often than not, I'm giving her positive feedback. I try.
Since we delve out parenting advice, we were hoping that maybe you might give like the best piece of parenting advice that you've ever given or feel inspired to give now.
All-purpose parenting advice.
All-purpose parenting advice.
Yes, this is something that was told to me years ago. I believe Jamila was in preschool. And I was talking to another parent, and the parent told me, you know, we were discussing what was going on in class and how the kids were responding and if they were getting the information the teachers were trying to impart. And she told me, remember this, you have to be responsible for educating your child. It is your personal responsibility. She can get her basics from classrooms, but the ultimate responsibility to educate our children socially, historically, etc., lies with us, the parent.
What's a story about little Jamila that she will be so angry you told us right now on the podcast?
Oh, okay. The runaway story. Okay. The runaway story. Jamila was 4. I can't recall what it is I said that upset her. There were so many things it could have been, but she was going to run away. She had decided to run away. So she bagged up some Oreos and she took them. We lived on a second flight in an apartment building, and she took them down to the first flight where there was like an alcove, a little, you know, and that was her runaway space.
That's how far you made it, Jamila?
Well, I don't know if I even made it out the door. I just remember thinking it's going to be so awkward when my mom walks back and forth between the door and her apartment because we're going to have to see each other. And that's what like made me abandon the whole plan. I was like, how am I going to deal with that? Can we say hi? And I only had 3 cookies. So there was that. I wasn't planning on that.
It wasn't a long term.
No, I'm saying I only had 3 in the bag because I think it was one of those like snack size bags. That was the other issue. It was like, how was I going to get more food? Like, it wasn't a well-baked plan. So I had to let it go. Did you want me to run? Do you wish I? I wanted to try it.
Yeah.
Well, we are so grateful to you, Isoki, for all you have done raising this truly unique individual who we get to talk to every week. Clearly, you did something right because, unlike me, she often delivers actually good, thought-out parenting advice, which she must have gotten from somewhere. So nice, nice work. Thank you for joining us. Elizabeth, it's your turn to bring a mom onto the show.
We'll see.
Thank you, Isoki.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here. It was very nice to meet you all.
It was so nice to meet you.
All right. Finally, we've got the part of the show where we like to recommend things we enjoy. I like to call it enjoyments. Elizabeth, what do you got?
So I am recommending this fun little Rubik's Cube called the Go Cube Smart Rubik's Cube. It connects to an app and it helps you solve the Rubik's Cube and then coaches you on getting faster. And here is why. Because Henry is so into solving this Rubik's Cube and I am shameful at being able to help him. It was like an obsession over the drive to try to do this Rubik's Cube. And I was looking up the things and trying to help remember the patterns. I suck at doing that. You start doing it, and then when you get stuck, the app helps you do the next moves, and there's different levels, and it's teaching you the basic moves. He's gotten really into like watching the competitions in which you do them really fast. He's really interested in learning that. There is zero chance I will be able to teach him that. So now he practices with the cube, and then he can practice, you know, on his own cube. But now he's been able to solve it a few times, and he's starting to solve it without help, and then it transforms into helping you, like showing you which moves you know, you made that you didn't need to make. So I don't know.
I withdraw my derisive laughter, but the idea of another thing being made smart is so funny to me. And I have this vision of like someone's Rubik's Cube, just you can't turn it anymore because you forgot to update the firmware.
Yeah.
And you have to pay a $20 license to turn your Rubik's Cube.
Jeff was very interested in, you know, how it works, but it's definitely just displaying the same thing on the computer. It's got some kind of sensor to know which things are up and where all your color blocks are and then giving you the next step. But it is totally ridiculous, but it's so fun. And if you have been someone that could never solve a Rubik's Cube and wondered how it's done, which is me,
right,
it's been really fun to do and be like, oh, okay, it's actually not, it's memorizing a bunch of combinations.
As someone who's never been able to solve a Rubik's Cube, if my kid got super into them, I would welcome this software into my life wholeheartedly. All right, great recommendation. Jamila, what about you?
So I'm not a potato chip person, but I am a cheese potato chip person. I'm a connoisseur of cheese potato chips, and I have found the best one yet. Ruffles queso. If you're buying it in the States, you're getting the U.S. version of their queso that they sell in Mexico, which does taste a little bit different. I've had it there. Both amazing. It's like a slight, I mean, it's like a, think of a queso dip, right? On a chip. It's kind of like if you like the cheddar and sour cream Ruffles classic cheese chip with a little kick to it, I think you'll enjoy it. I eat them a few times a week and I spend so much time thinking about them. It is embarrassing. They're so good.
The chip that lives in your brain rent-free.
It lives in my brain rent-free.
Great recommendation. I'm recommending a museum in Washington that I had never been to for some reason, though, even though I've lived here for basically half my life over the course of my 46 years. The museums in Washington are starting to reopen now, and that has been great. A couple weeks ago, Alia planned out a trip for us to meet some friends at the National Museum of Women in the Arts, a museum I'd never even heard of before. It's not one of the Smithsonian's. I think that's why I had never heard of it before. It's a privately run museum, which means it does have an admission tuition fee, a modest one, unlike all the Smithsonian's. But it is a charming, beautiful, small museum that is perfectly family-sized. It takes about an hour and 15 minutes to walk through. So you're out of there before anyone has a chance to be sick of the experience. And it's a great mix of a extremely well-curated collection of classic and contemporary art by women and a rotating set, you know, as all museums have, a rotating set of shows, which when we were there were just extremely fascinating. There's a show by the textile artist Sonia Clark, who does a lot of work on race and visibility, particularly around black hair, and has made a bunch of totally fascinating two-dimensional sculptures using black plastic combs that she pops the teeth out of to create different wild patterns. All in all, it's like just a great sort of hidden gem museum right here in Washington, D.C. I'm sure for some people it's not hidden at all. They've known about it forever and they'll be like, Dan, you're a dick. For us, it was a hidden gem. We never knew it was here. And we really loved it. Great museum to take the family to for an afternoon. All right. That is it for our show. One last time. If you have a question for us, drop us an email, momanddad@slate.com. We want to hear from you. If we've answered your question and you got an update, send us an email, momanddad@slate.com. You can also post anything you want in the Slate Parenting Facebook group. We sometimes work our way through that and find questions there as well. And it's a great place where you can get lots of good advice, not only from us, but from your fellow listeners. Everyone's pretty nice. If they're not nice, we kick them out. Just search for Slate Parenting on Facebook.com. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson, Jamila Lemieux, and Elizabeth Newcamp. I'm Dan Coyce. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.